The Octavo Singers of Schenectady is an 80-year-old community chorus of about 100 singers. They generally perform large sacred works and present their concerts almost exclusively in big urban churches and synagogues. This Sunday, December 16th at 3 p.m., the Octavo Singers will present Handel's Messiah at the Union College Memorial Chapel. Here to tell us more about the singers and the chorus is their artistic director and conductor, Curtis Funk. Curtis, thank you very much for being with us. Great pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's a delight. This organization has been around for a very long time. I didn't realize the roots went back that far.
Yeah, we're celebrating our 80th year, and actually, it's either our 79th or our 80th, depending whether or not you start with the first rehearsal or the first concert. But either way, it goes back to the mid-30s. We actually started in part with WPA funds, and the mandate of the group is pretty basic. It was just people who were like-minded in that they enjoyed singing music were invited to gather. And the group's been around 80 years, and I'm only the third conductor. The first two conductors.
Well, it's like Mayor of Albany.
Right.
The same agent.
And the other point of exclusivity is I'm the only conductor who's not named George. George Mason founded it, and George Moros took over. So I took over a couple years ago, and if I follow tradition, I'll still be conducting when I'm 96. So.
Well, good for you. That's a good career goal. And so we can just from that story, you can take two things out of it. One is that it obviously is something that for those that get involved brings great passion and affection that you would want to keep doing it for that long.
Absolutely. The people that I work with are just wonderful. It's a non-auditioning group, and it's they're unpaid singers. So they're just, as you say, Joe, just for the passion, and wonderful people. They have yet to look at me and say, no, we're not going to do that. They want to be there to make a glorious sound, and they do.
How do you find them? The people, obviously, I mean, I assume that none of them are paid. This is a volunteer group.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you find these wonderful singers?
Well, I was actually very lucky. As I say, I've only been here a couple of years, and I walked into a group of about 76 to 80. They were already entrenched, and during my tenure, we picked up an additional 20 people. And basically, it's word of mouth. We have brochures, and we have a website. We have the traditional marketing things, but by and large, people come to the concerts, and if they have a love of singing, the next thing you know, you find them actually joining the group as opposed to just going to the concerts. So even though we don't do any real wholesale recruiting, the membership just kind of takes on a life of its own.
Does it come from not recruiting per se, but is there a buzz that goes through the choral community of whether it be in churches or synagogues or different places?
I think so. If you look at the Capital District, there's a large performing choral group in each county. You know, Albany's got APM, Saratoga has Burn Hills Oratorio Society. So we're sort of the Schenectady-based community chorus. And you're right. It's just kind of a buzz that goes through the community. Now with APM, obviously they're an auditioning group. So
Albany Pro Music.
Right on. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
Use an alphabet soup here. As I say, with our group, we're not auditioning. We just have people come in and they sing a couple of notes for me, just so I can place them range wise. By and large, the people who do come at least have a little bit of a musical background, probably their church choir or maybe a high school or a college choir, that type of thing. Most of the people in my group at least do a little bit of note reading,
mm-hmm.
Though it's not absolutely a prerequisite. I've got a few people in there who don't read, but we sit them next to people who are stronger singers until they kind of evolve into it.
How many concerts do you do in a year?
We do three major ones. We do one in the fall. We do one in December, and that's always the Messiah, and then we do one in the spring. This fall, we did a piece, a concert called Viva Italia. It was wonderful. It was the Puccini Messa di Gloria and the Rossini Stabat Mater, and we did that at Union, and we had a nice turnout.
Right.
It was a lot of fun. And then in the spring, we'll be doing Judas Maccabeus. This will be the first time in a while that we've done something by Handel other than the Messiah. So the audience goers are actually going to get back-to-back Handelian experiences.
There is, I think there is a, I was going to say it's an unwritten rule, but maybe it is a written rule that if you're a ballet group, you have to do the Nutcracker. If you're a theater group, you have to do A Christmas Carol. And if you're a choral group, you have to do Handel's Messiah.
Yeah. Don't know that it's written down.
but what's interesting about that, two things I find interesting. Mm-hmm. One is that the audience expects it in the sense of they want to hear their local choral group do that. And it's something that is very, very important and traditional during the holiday season. The other thing is that most groups that do it have great fondness of it because the reason that it is all of those, that all of that repertoire is so, it has such longevity is because it's classic.
Oh, it's just amazing music. It really is. You have to kind of find a delicate balance in terms of how many groups are doing it, though.
Yeah.
If every group did it, you wouldn't have an audience because, you know, most people will not go to see two Messiahs in a season. So we've kind of got squatter's rights on Schenectady County's Messiah and have for a while. But as you say, this particular concert kind of sells itself. People just love the Messiah, and for good reason. It's just so much beautiful music. The orchestra parts are beautiful. The four solo parts are beautiful. The choruses are just wonderful. They have these things, Joe, they're called melismas. What it is it's one syllable of text, but spread over many, many, many notes. And very difficult to do. An instrumentalist would have more success with it than a vocalist, at least initially, until there was some home practice. But the Hallelujah and the Messiah is just loaded with melismas, and it almost takes the chorus and kind of turns it into an orchestra, per se. Mm. So we've just had a lot of fun the last 5 weeks, and we only rehearsed 5 weeks. Our Viva Italia concert just got over on November 18th. So we've been putting this Messiah together for the last month, and a lot of the rehearsals have been just taking those melismatic phrases and slowing them down and just doing them chunk by chunk and then putting them back together.
How many sections do you look at? I mean, if you look at it in terms of being an orchestra of that choral group, how many sections are there?
There would be four choral sections. We have the sopranos, the altos, the tenors, and the basses. And this particular work doesn't subdivide within that, so you've really got the four basic sounds. In addition, we have four soloists, again, soprano, alto, tenor, bass. And we're putting it together with a 22-piece orchestra. Strings, and then just a small amount of woodwinds, brass, and percussion, what we would call a Baroque orchestra, the orchestra that you would typically see from 1600 to 1750. When Handel first wrote this piece, the initial rollout in Dublin was for 16 boys and 16 men and an orchestra of 20. So he really kind of intended it to be more of a small-scale work. It wasn't until after Handel was dead that ensembles started doing it with larger and larger numbers. Matter of fact, my colleague Woody Bynum, his group is doing it, I believe it's tomorrow, at the cathedral downtown, and he's going to be doing it with a boys' choir and a men's choir, and it might even be the 32 that I mentioned. I'll be doing it with 115 people and an orchestra of 22, so ours is sort of the more grandiose performance as opposed to the traditional authentic performance.
And that is, I would think, venue is important then for you of where you go. Obviously, size. I mean, that's one mm-hmm. thing. But also of just being able to carry that sound and you know blow the doors off the place, which I think obviously this the chapel, which is beautiful, lends itself perfectly to.
It really does. That is wonderful space. And you're absolutely right. A lot of where we perform is done via limitation. There are only certain venues that will accommodate that many people and that many instrumentalists and still end up with kind of an unmuddied sound. Union is a great, great place. The only one qualification with Union is I, as the conductor, am pretty far back from my front row of singers. There's probably, I'm going to guess, maybe 20 feet between me and the first row of singers and the orchestra in between that. So when we get there on Wednesday and Saturday for our two dress rehearsals, the first thing we're going to have to work with is that time lag. The group's going to actually have to Sing what I call visually as opposed to orally, A-U-R. They're going to have to, you know, watch my hand and respond to that as opposed to wait to hear the sound. If they wait to hear the sound, they're going to be behind. And if they do that over any protracted length of time, this 2.5 hour work is going to go into 3 hours. At that point, the orchestra gets overtime and the whole thing gets messy.
You know, and I don't look, a work of art is a work of art, but you know, you got to keep it moving for 2.5 hours. I mean, that is a commitment on an audience as well.
That's exactly right. It really is. And I do one intermission, one 15 intermission. The piece is offered in three parts, and a lot of conductors will do two small intermissions and break up each part. I just keep it to the one intermission. So you're absolutely right that the audience has got to kind of hunker down. Hopefully they've canceled their mail and their newspaper delivery for the afternoon.
And get ready for a beautiful time of music.
Absolutely.
I keep on saying evening, but it's an afternoon performance.
It starts at 3.
3 o'clock on Sunday, December 16th. And when it comes to challenges, you've done this many times. So the challenge of doing it is, I assume, the repeated challenge of making it fresh for all involved.
Absolutely. You know, there are certain things that you can do year after year after year. You know, for instance, the Hallelujah chorus, the middle section, what I call the B section, we're going to slow it down and then we pick it up again. So there are certain traditions I like to do every year. But one of the characteristics of Baroque music is just variety. I don't think any one Baroque composer fully anticipated that the music would get interpreted the exact same way every time. So even when we pulled out our books and started rehearsing this season, I would do something a little different. And somebody would raise their hand. They'd say, "Well, I've got it in my part that we did." And I said, "Yeah, but that was last year." And I said, new life, new breath. And so you're right. The part of the challenge is to keep it fresh. That being said, this piece really just is so, it just takes care of itself. It's such a wonderful, wonderful piece of music that it just has such a life that it's really hard not to get excited about it year after year.
The Octavo Singers will be performing Handel's Messiah at the Union College Memorial Chapel at 3 p.m. Sunday, December 16th. To learn more about the Octavo Singers, go to octavosingers.com, octavosingers.com, or call 518-253-7088. 518-253-7088. Curtis Funk is the artistic director and conductor. Curtis, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Have a wonderful time on Sunday afternoon.
Thanks so much. This was a lot of fun.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Coming up next, the Congressional Corner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.